Hello, welcome to the Swine Time Podcast here at Pipestone. I'm your host, Spencer Wayne. I'm one of the staff veterinarians here at Pipestone, one of the owners of Pipestone Holdings. And besides being a regular vet that goes out and works with farmers and works with our managed farms, they let me do something fun, which is host this podcast. I get to host interesting guests a couple times a month, typically. And sometimes they're from outside of our organization if we think they got some really interesting stuff. But a lot of times they're folks that we work with here within our group. And today I have such a person. And my guest today is Nick Fitzgerald. And I'll just tee it up and let him hit it out of the park. Nick, why don't you tell us about yourself, what you do, and then we'll get to what we're going to talk about together.
You bet. Appreciate that, Spencer. The interesting guest must not have called you back for this one, and I was the I was the fill-in, huh?
Yeah, you were number five on the list. We didn't want to say that.
That's okay. I appreciate that, though. No, my name's Nick Fitzgerald. I'm the Director of Business Development for Pipestone. Spend most of my time working with our managed sow farms and building the rosters for the livestock real estate companies and then also weaned pigs, weaned pig agreements, and that along with Rick and Terry. So been with Pipestone for 7 years. Originated actually in Eastern Iowa, Tipton, Iowa, born and raised in Cedar County. My wife and two daughters have a small farm there. We raise some cattle. We're actually shareholders in a couple of Pipestone managed sow farms. So we get to, I get the wonderful pleasure of seeing both sides of it as a Pipestone team member and then also a shareholder as well.
Yeah, I think I'm the vet for the sow unit of some pigs you get.
Bobcat.
Exactly. They've been good pigs.
They're great.
Okay, good.
Nice work, Spencer.
Yeah, I wish I could take some credit, but it's a good team and good health and a lot of things that are I have nothing to do with. But okay, great. So you just described your role here is a very broad set of things you do. And so I'm going to corner you now and peel one little section of your big brain apart, and let's just talk about one topic for the podcast today, and that is considerations for wean to finish construction, remodels, use of facilities. It'd be good just to see what you have for some opinions on that. And the purpose really is to give producers out there some kind of an idea of, all right, I got a barn that needs new metal or needs some improvement, or I've got an existing sow barn that I want to convert to a finisher. Just some rules of thumb is what I'm looking for today.
Yeah, sure. And this actually is a passion of mine. You know, I mentioned I spend most of my time working with our managed sow farms, but my background's primarily on the wean to market side, both as a pig owner, and also earlier in my career, I spent a number of years with the Mashoffs and did a fair bit of business development work with that company, Ken and Dave Mashoff and that family, great family. Learned a lot there, for sure. And so in that particular role, I spent my focus really was on wean to market barns, barn design, facility specifications, did some research work on feeder types and things of that nature for the wean to market barns. And so a big passion of mine in terms of experience in that regard. I was in that role for also about 7 years with Ken and Dave Mashoff and that family. So learned through that system and really have worked to apply that through our production system with my dad, brother, and I, and we've got some other partners that we work with along those lines as well. And so really enjoy working with our shareholders as they look at and consider either building a new barn or remodeling an existing asset. And so we're in that environment right now too, Spencer, where costs are extremely high.
Yeah. On that, let's just start there and say, all right, a guy wants to add more pig rearing capacity to his operation. Yep. And maybe he could buy a neighbor's barn. He could remodel an older barn. He could do whatever. But if he's just going to build a new barn, greenfield construction in a section that he's got two sections over, that's good for the manure. How much does it cost? And define the typical barn, and then what's the construction space per square foot, or per pig space would be a better way to put it.
Yeah.
Some reference points of just what it is roughly today.
Sure. A typical, what I would call our preferred barn It would be a double wide 2,500 head barn. A barn like that today would be probably a little north of $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, this is post COVID inflation and material costs and component costs, with that have experienced significant cost increases. But yeah, I mean, what's that mean? That means $420 a space, mm-hmm. all in to do that.
Yeah. So, okay, knowing it's that expensive then, if you are a contract grower, or if you're working with somebody who wants to be a contract grower for you, and you're looking at somebody that's looking at $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, $2 million cost barn, what's the rent rate right now for a new barn? Just common rent rate for somebody that had to spend that money, flow the money through for a 12 or a 15 year note, something that makes sense. What's the typical financing situation today and rent rate situation?
Yeah. What we have done as we've experienced cost increases year over year, really is stretch these things out. You know, I think back to early in my career, we had talked about pig barns being 10, maybe 15 year type assets. And that's all they were originally financed, maybe for 5 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. Then we stretched that out to 10. Then it was stretched to 12. Now it's 15 or more.
Really?
15 more than 15 or more in terms of AM schedules on these, to try to get these things to cash flow. Yardage rates today, I'll say mid 40s.
Okay.
In terms of yardage rates. And even with mid 40s yardage rates, and I would call that industry leading today, 44, maybe 45, maybe. They don't cash flow that well when we're looking at a $1.1 million project.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. Okay. So you just defined new, like this is yep. new, and that's kind of what you're going into. And then what you really, we brought you in here to talk about is, okay, remodels, other repurposed buildings, repurposed sow unit.
Mm-hmm.
Go through a couple of the approaches. Let's say I'll tee it up here. You got a 1100 head or 1000 head barn that needs new gating, new slats, new curtain on the sides, yeah. New feeders. And just to kind of break those down, what is a rough, if you're just guessing, a per pig cost to put new metal in a barn, to put new feeders in a barn?
Yep.
Just go through that. And I know nothing could be exact, but just ballpark. What do you think those costs, if you were going to stack them up, would be?
Ballpark numbers, as we look at that, you know, and gating, for example, if we're going to look at doing a new gating package in a barn, you know, if we were to do what I would call our large pens with pre-sort capability in there, so that would be taking, you know, a small pen, 25 to 35 pig small pen. We create a little larger pen in there. We have an area to pre-sort those pigs in advance of the market hog load, get those pigs off feed, to help with transport. And then we're shipping pigs with an empty belly rather than 5 or 6 pounds of feed in there. That gating package is going to be in the neighborhood of $25 to $30 a space,
okay.
Just for the gating package.
And that new gating, like, open slats, nothing there to put the appropriate amount of gates and pens.
That's correct.
And they do that. Yep. Okay. Yep. All right.
Feeders, you know, we look at feeders and not all feeders are created equal. You know, there's lots of different options out there, wet, dry feeders, dry feeders. And frankly, even within those two primary feeder types, not all feeders are created equal. And so,
what would you put in today? Because you mentioned tubes you're not going to put tubes in, I'm guessing.
Not putting tubes in today.
What are the options for probably state-of-the-art, what you would do?
My preference would be the wet dry shelf feeder.
Okay.
There's some pretty compelling data to support increase in average daily feed intake, increase in average daily gain, consequently resulting in more pounds out the door for the owner.
Conversion impact?
Conversion impact is... I wouldn't expect a feed conversion impact going from a dry feeder to a wet dry feeder, for example.
Okay.
You may even see feed conversion tick up just a bit with that, because we're getting a little more intake in those pigs too.
Okay.
And so with that, the wet dry shelf feeder versus the dry, you know, like I said, we could research John's feeder trial or our Pipestone Applied Research feeder trials on there and reference those. But there is some pretty compelling data that would suggest we'll sell more pounds of pork out the door with the wet dry feeder for sure.
And I forgot, water usage or wastage is going to be way better.
Oh, water conservation. That was one in our trial looking at those feeders. That was one of the single biggest influencing or impacts, really, was the water reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And don't quote me on this for sure, but it was something like a 40% difference in water disappearance. Yeah. So 40% less water.
Right. So that's 40% less loads to the field with hauling water. Okay, so that was a rabbit trail.
Yeah.
Wet dry sounded like what you put in. Ballpark cost per finishing pig space. How would ballpark range or whatever you want to frame it up as?
About 20.
Okay.
About $20 a space for that feeder.
So you said 25 for the gating.
25 for the gating.
$20 a space for feeders. So you have to $45 a space for new metal and new feeders.
New gates, new feeders.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
One thing I would mention, just as a disclaimer with this, if we're looking at an asset that has some age to it, we should definitely look at the foundation before we invest considerable dollars in the remodel. And what do I mean by that specifically? Slats and lintels the equipment's going to sit on.
Okay.
And so there's some great contractors, even here locally in Minnesota, Oldenburg Construction, for example. They do a lot of work with slat replacement. They will come to the farm, inspect your slats, inspect your precast, and provide a recommendation to the owners or the barn owners on that, on, you know, lifespan.
Uh-huh.
And also if there needs to be a replacement, they could go through that. But that group does a great job.
Yeah, I've been in a barn that burnt in a fire, and then they came and reconstructed it over the existing slats and pit foundation.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember walking in and thinking, did they look at this? Because it seemed like the gangs were bowed and dipped in, and the guy said, well, the engineer came through and said it was fine. And I'm thinking, well, he knows more than me. But I'd say get an engineer, because you or I are not qualified to probably make some of those assessments just by eyeballing it, I guess.
Well, and that's true. And if you see a bowed slat, that doesn't necessarily mean the integrity of the slat's wrong.
Yeah.
That could mean the slat was set maybe a little green.
Mm.
And so initially it was set and it was level. It was a little green. And as it cured, got a little bit of that bow in there while it was sitting inside of the barn.
Okay. But basically get an expert to help on these things.
Get an expert to help on those things, for sure.
So what, if you're going to re-slat a barn, what's the guess on what that might cost to get a hole and then have them, you know, dolly these things in?
As we look at those, and there's going to be a fair bit of variability with this, because it's much easier to set slats with no roof, no trusses, no walls, right? You just use the crane and bing, bing, bang, you're setting slats. Well, in a barn that's already built in there, it's hard to do. And so they will costs on the slats or slat replacement, if you're just pulling them out and replacing them kind of one at a time that way, you're going to be looking in the neighborhood of $50 a space just for slats and some precast work.
Okay. So are there other major big ticket items if you're doing refurbishing a unit? You have floor, metal, feeders. There's other things, fans, there's curtains and stuff. Yeah. But are there any other big ticket items that you'd want to look at?
There's definitely some great technology out there as we look at controls. As we look at fans, efficient, highly efficient fans. So direct drive fans out there. Really, for me, what I would encourage folks to look at when we're working on remodeling barns is, let's look at everything while we go through and reinvest in this project. We look at inlets. Actuated inlets would be certainly a preference. We look at CFM specifications in the barns. Mm-hmm. And so I think as... over my time in the industry, over the last 20 years, we've seen a big change in where we were raising pig. Like, our end point for raising market hogs 20 years ago is quite a bit different than what it is today.
End point, it's pig size, the weight.
Weight, yep, specifically weight. We're making pigs bigger. And so with that said, ventilation requirements go up. We're dealing with more BTUs of heat being produced and so on and so forth in there. And so for those reasons, we should look at CFM specifications in the barns. So if, as we look at tunnel barns, for example, you know, 125 CFMs, we need to have that in a barn today. You know, and 15 years ago, we were making them probably around 105
really?
CFMs.
I didn't realize that had gone up that much.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of related to that, curtain-sided barn versus a tunnel barn. Tunnel barn or any kind of power barn, you're controlling the environment and you're putting the air over the pig to cool that pig down. And so you should get better performance than a curtain-sided barn that's operating on a still day with no ability to really dissipate the heat. What would you guess the performance difference? You know, because this is barn payments, grower payments are adjusted according to what kind of barn you got. What kind of performance difference is there on average if you were kind of quantify what my barn is worth, or should I put make it a power barn? Should I build a tunnel barn or a curtain barn? How would you look at that? That's a big question.
It is, and I'm not sure I got the right a great answer for you, and I'll share why. Power ventilated barn, tunnel ventilated barns versus power natural. What I would call a power natural barn, just to define that, would be, you know, pit ventilation, maybe a wall fan or two. You know, call it a 40 CFM type barn, and then the curtains would come down with some stir fans in there, circulation fans. That's what I call a power natural barn. The big value, of course, is in the summer with big pigs.
Of having the power piece?
Of having the tunnel ventilated piece.
Correct.
There. Okay. Yep. Sorry. That's where the value of the tunnel ventilated barn really shines through as we look at ventilation. There are some other benefits to the tunnel barn. In the wintertime, with wean pigs, there's a benefit of the tunnel barn. You don't have 400 feet of curtain surface area on each side of this 2,400 head barn that you're losing your heat, or you're experiencing heat loss with. So they are more efficient in the wintertime as well from an energy standpoint. In the summertime, I've looked for that data to be able to quantify what the performance difference is between the two. Unfortunately, I have not been able to find very good data to support that one way or the other. I think the caretaker, in my opinion, the caretaker, the barn manager, matters more than tunnel versus power natural.
Okay. All right. Interesting. I've had the same question in where I worked before, and people are comparing barn types and finding that, like, yeah, nobody really had good data to support what your conclusions might be. What would you build today? Just like the feeders, would you build a tunnel barn or a curtain barn?
I would build the tunnel barn. I would build the 100 wide. There's some 120 wide versions out there. 100 by 196 or 200 foot long, large pens, pre-sort, and with a controller that you've got remote access with. Mm-hmm. So if you're out in the tractor planting corn or harvesting and you want to just check and see what's going on in the barn, there's some pretty neat technology out there that can chart what it is that's going on in the barn, where you're at. And also even down to, like, on these new controls, you can chart down to amp draws and things like that on there, so you can see how your fans are performing.
It seemed like about 5 years ago, there was a big jump where all the companies came out with, I would say, vastly improved controllers.
Yep.
5 to 8 years ago, something like that happened. And even, I won't say the name of the company, but a company that I would say made the worst controllers makes a controller now that does all the things you just said, where I'm just blown away by, why didn't you do that before? But they got way better about 5 to 6, 7 years ago, it seemed, it seemed like. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Okay, one final scenario. If you got a sow unit, like, I'm not going to farrow anymore, or I got too much disease pressure, something has changed your dynamics where you need to repurpose that sow unit. How do you approach that? I got a gestation barn on deep pitted gestation barn, and I got pull plug farrowing, and a typical scenario of the ratio of farrowing crates to gestation crates. Just take us through that if you're going to do some basic math.
So recently we've done that a fair bit with some of our barns that are in more disease challenged or pig dense areas. We have gone through and put together some projections or estimates for those shareholders. And so I would say it depends a lot on the flooring that is in the G barn today. So the GDU component of it, generally is already a wean to market barn, right? And so that's kind of move in ready. The gestation barn, you know, if we've got the 60-40 slats or formed poured concrete alleyways in there, that makes the G barn really difficult to look at a conversion on, because you're virtually working with a partially slatted barn that goes slat, solid, slat, solid, slat, solid, slat, solid across the G barn. Really hard to do without completely replacing all the slats.
And most of those would be pull plugs with that dimensions too, or not necessarily. I don't know how you, how the mix is of pull plug versus deep pit, even with the broken flooring type.
Yeah. It there are a number of them that are that way. Yep. Pull plug. I'll use Eagle Ridge as an example. Eagle, we're totally slatted in the gestation barn at Eagle Ridge. And so that conversion would be really pretty easy. I mean, we need to take out the equipment inside of that barn that exists for the sows, so the stalls, the feed systems, and that. Yeah. But we can effectively go in. We've got a blank slate there at that point. We could effectively go in and make a wean to market barn out of that very, very quickly and easily.
It seems like it. Some of these questions come up for a sow unit, and the owner is trying to wonder what to do. Yep. The flooring type ends up being a huge determinant.
It really
I got a full slatted barn versus I've got a shallow pit with solid areas of walkways and feed alleys and slatted areas. And think, oh, this is really stupid. All of a sudden, and it just blows the project up. You don't do it. But I think that's pretty fair. That may be the biggest determiner of what you end up doing as your flooring type within the G barn.
It really is. It really is. And then you get to the point with farrowing. Farrowing generally can convert to a nursery pretty easily. Mm-hmm. It generally can. It frankly, it houses piglets today too, right? With mama, but it can convert to nursery pretty easily. You know, then you need to balance, right? Do you want multi-age production on the same site? And so if the G barn works, you can make a really nice wean to market site out of just the G barn and the GDU. That may be the best outcome. If the G barn has flooring that makes this incredibly difficult, maybe the farrowing and you make this site a nursery site. Mm-hmm. So just thanks for consideration anyway.
Yeah. And maybe that you mothball a barn and you use the other barn just because at least you have the one barn.
Yeah, for sure.
Every situation is going to be unique. It's got to be. This is a off to the side wild card question, but we filter sow units. Is anybody filtering grow finish space at all? Is there any reason to consider that? I have no one guy who's doing it in a commercial nursery, but what is the scenario for that?
Yeah, I know of one guy doing it in a commercial nursery as well. You know, as you look at filtration costs and cost per pig, at least replacement and that of the filters, and also consider the area in which, you know, are you under attack every single day? So I'll use in my area in central Iowa, for example, we would be under attack every single day, and we know filtration's good, but not perfect. And what would be the likelihood of a PERS break there, even with filters? I don't know. We don't see it widely adopted across the industry. I don't know how easily it would be to justify the cost for filtration.
I can't remember what the cost estimates even were, but I remember whatever I heard was like, nobody would ever filter a finishing barn because the air movement requirements are so high for that one pig space. Do you think I can do it for a sow? I can't do that for a finishing pig typically. Right. Okay. That's probably it, man. I beat this thing up with you for a while. 24 minutes in, we covered a lot of ground. Is there anything in closing that you think is worth sharing as far as some thoughts on remodels, new construction? You got anything in that we didn't cover?
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate a couple of those topics just briefly would be, you know, let's make sure we're confident in the foundation of the barns. So checking slats and lintels as we look at remod opportunities there. You know, and you know, wet dry feeders have been very good to our shareholders and our clients that we work with on the wean to market side. So I would encourage someone, if they need to go down that path and do a feeder replacement, we look hard at that.
Okay. And if people have questions, they can call here, call Mainline, and we'll get in touch with you, or people can get forwarded to you is what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
And you, as far as experts that I would talk to, it's you. There's probably other guys that I would trust to think through these things, but I know you're my go-to guy for this. So, yeah, or other related questions for sow farm share ownership or other things that I know you're involved with, Nick, call and get a hold of Nick if you've got questions on these things.
Well, I appreciate that vote of confidence, Spencer.
All right, Nick, thank you for being our guest here. Thank you to the listeners for tuning into this episode of Swine Time Podcast here at Pipestone.
The Swine Time Podcast was created for the pork industry and individual pork producers around the country. Hosted by me, Dr. Spencer Wayne with Pipestone Veterinary Services, the podcast contains pork industry news, advancements in animal care, and how to enhance your productivity. Find the Swine Time Podcast at www.pipestone.com or on your favorite listening platform.